This episode is a deep dive into three papers that sit right in the path of your planned doctor simulation project. The project idea is not simply to ask whether a large language model can name the medically best treatment. It is sharper and more interesting than that. You want to know whether LLM augmented agents can simulate the real distribution of specialist treatment recommendations. Using local EHR cases, chart-derived rationales, similar patient retrieval, and maybe a statistical calibration layer. That distinction matters. A guideline-only model might be medically polished and still fail at the thing you actually care about, predicting what a real heart team, urologist, radiation oncologist, or tumor board was likely to recommend at the index decision point, under local workflows, patient preferences, clinician uncertainty, and institutional practice patterns. The three papers in the folder help triangulate the problem. First, May and colleagues ask whether AI chatbots are behaviorally similar to humans. This is not a medical paper, but it gives you a methodological anchor. If the target is human-like behavior, then the test should compare distributions of behavior, not just plausible individual answers. It also warns that AI behavior may be too concentrated, too cooperative, and too sensitive to framing. Second, Physician Bench evaluates LLM agents in real EHR environments. This is directly relevant because it leaves the world of static medical question answering and puts agents into long-horizon clinical work, retrieving chart data, reasoning across encounters, creating EHR actions, and documenting plans. The headline is sobering. Even strong agents remain far from reliable. Third, ClinPivot asks whether clinical models change treatment decisions when patient constraints change. This paper is a useful warning against treating medical QA accuracy as clinical decision competence. A model can know a disease treatment association and still fail to revise the treatment when a contraindication, interaction, allergy, or off-label trap changes the action space. Taken together, the papers say something important for your project. A credible, locally calibrated clinician simulation agent needs three things at once. It needs behavioral validation against real observed decisions. It needs EHR-grounded workflow competence, and it needs sensitivity to patient-specific pivots that change what a reasonable recommendation looks like. The hard part is that those are not the same skill. A system can sound like a clinician without matching real clinicians. It can retrieve data without making the right decision. It can answer exam questions without pivoting under constraints. And it can produce a guideline concordant answer while missing the local descriptive target entirely. So the episode's through line is this. These papers do not just support your project. They help define its failure modes. Before we get into the papers, it is worth naming the project's central target. The target is behavioral fidelity, not clinical omniscience, not autonomous treatment, not proof that local practice is optimal. Behavioral fidelity means estimating what real clinicians or clinical teams were likely to recommend with calibrated uncertainty in a particular local environment for patients like the one in front of them. That is a strange target only if we assume medicine is just guideline lookup. But specialist decisions are often preference sensitive, institutionally shaped, and made under partial information. Severe aortic stenosis may involve TAVR, SAVR, conservative management, or further workup. Coronary disease may involve PCI, CABG, optimal medical therapy, or staged evaluation. Localized prostate cancer may involve surgery, radiation, active surveillance, or more testing. A localized renal mass may invite surveillance, ablation, partial nephrectomy, radical nephrectomy, or biopsy. Oropharynx cancer may depend on anatomy, HPV status, functional trade-offs, surgical exposure, radiation toxicity, and local enthusiasm for transoral surgery. In all of those cases, the recommendation at the index consult is not identical to the final treatment received. The final treatment may reflect patient preference, scheduling, insurance, outside opinions, evolving data, clinical trial access, or simply time. So the project plan rightly separates at least three labels: the index recommendation, the final treatment or action, and the rationale documented at the time. This separation is one of the project's strongest design choices. If you model only final treatment, you may learn a mixture of clinical recommendation, patient choice, logistics, and health system friction. If you model only guideline concordant treatment, you may miss the empirical behavior of local clinicians. If you model only top one accuracy, you may erase the fact that real cases often have several reasonable options and that clinicians may express uncertainty. The proposed agent therefore needs to output a probability distribution over candidate recommendations, not just a single answer. It also needs to separate two voices, a local descriptive prediction and a normative guideline or evidence-based recommendation. That separation protects the science. It lets the model say, in effect, here is what the local team probably recommended, and separately, here is what broader evidence might favor, and then explain where the two agree or diverge. The three papers help justify that architecture. May motivates distributional behavioral testing. Physician Bench motivates realistic EHR-grounded task design and checkpoint evaluation. ClinPivot motivates patient-specific decision pivots and the need to evaluate treatment decisions as decisions, not medical trivia.
The first paper is May, Xie, Yuan, and Jackson's PNAS paper, a Turing test of whether AI chatbots are behaviorally similar to humans. The setup is elegant. Instead of asking whether a chatbot can pass as human in conversation, the authors ask whether chatbot behavior resembles human behavior in structured behavioral tasks. They administer Big Five personality questions and six classic behavioral economics games: dictator, ultimatum, trust, bomb risk, public goods, and finitely repeated prisoner's dilemma. The comparison data are large, more than 100,000 human subjects across Big Five and MobLab behavioral game datasets. The chatbots are run repeatedly, so the authors can compare a distribution of AI responses to a distribution of human responses. The key methodological idea is that human likeness is not a vibe. It is a statistical comparison against observed human behavior. In one version of the behavioral Turing test, they draw one AI action and one human action, then ask which action looks more likely under the human distribution. If the AI often chooses actions that are common among humans, it passes in this behavioral sense. The results are nuanced. ChatGPT-4 often falls within the human distribution and, by their formal test, can look as human-like or more human-like than a randomly selected human in some settings. But the AI behavior is narrower. The chatbot distributions are more tightly clustered than the human distributions. And when the chatbots differ from humans, they tend to be more altruistic, more cooperative, more generous, more trusting, and more reciprocal. For a clinical simulation project, that is both encouraging and alarming. It is encouraging because it shows that LLMs can reproduce some structured patterns of human behavior, at least in certain tasks. They are not just random text generators in this frame. They respond to incentives, roles, prior experience, and framing in ways that can be compared against human data. But it is alarming because the behavior can be too clean. In the paper's games, the chatbots often occupy a subset of the human behavioral range. They may be human-like in support, but not human-like in variance. That distinction maps directly onto clinical recommendations. A guideline-trained or helpful assistant model may produce plausible, pro-social, balanced recommendations while underrepresenting real variation in local practice. It may collapse toward the middle of the policy distribution. Imagine a preference-sensitive prostate cancer case. Real clinicians might vary in how strongly they frame active surveillance, surgery, and radiation, depending on age, risk group, urinary symptoms, sexual function concerns, comorbidity, local specialty culture, and patient priorities. A model might produce a polished answer that carefully says all options are reasonable. That may sound clinically mature, but it might not match the observed recommendation distribution in a real clinic. May also shows that framing matters. Asking the chatbot to explain itself, telling it that an observer is present, or prompting it with an occupation can change its behavior. In the ultimatum game, for example, asking ChatGPT-4 to play as a mathematician shifts behavior toward payoff-maximizing logic, while asking it to play as a legislator shifts it toward fairness. That is directly relevant to clinician personas. A prompt that says you are a cardiologist or you are a heart team is not a validated simulator. It is a behavioral prior. It may help, hurt, or merely make the output sound more plausible. Your project plan's instinct is right. Persona-prompted or role-prompted agents should be baselines, not assumptions. May also gives you a validation philosophy. The right question is not, does this generated rationale feel realistic? The right question is, given observed clinician recommendations in a comparable information state, does the simulated distribution match the empirical distribution, including uncertainty, variance, and subgroup behavior? For your project, the analog of the behavioral games is the index clinical decision. The human data are the chart abstracted recommendations and rationales. The AI action distribution is the model's predicted probability over TAVR versus SAVR, PCI versus CABG, surgery versus radiation versus surveillance, or surveillance versus ablation versus nephrectomy. The strongest lesson from May is that you should measure more than mean behavior. Check whether the model is too concentrated. Check whether it is too guideline-centered. Check whether it systematically over-cooperates with patient preference language or overstates shared decision-making uncertainty. Check whether role prompts create believable but miscalibrated behavior, and check whether subgroup interactions break even when aggregate results look good. The second paper, Physician Bench, moves from behavioral games into real clinical agent work. Liu and colleagues introduce a benchmark for evaluating LLM agents on physician tasks,
grounded in real clinical settings inside EHR environments. The benchmark contains 100 long horizon tasks adapted from real consultation cases between primary care and subspecialty physicians. Tasks span 21 specialties and diverse workflows: diagnosis interpretation, medication prescribing, treatment planning, workup, and risk stratification. The important thing is that these are not static multiple choice questions. Each task is instantiated in an EHR environment with real patient records accessed through FHIR APIs. The agent has to retrieve data across encounters, reason over heterogeneous information, execute actions like creating medication orders or service requests, and produce clinical documentation. This is a serious step toward evaluating agents as agents. The benchmark uses 670 checkpoints across the 100 tasks. These checkpoints capture clinically meaningful milestones: data retrieval, clinical reasoning, action execution, and documentation. Some graders are code-based and verify created FHIR resources. Some are hybrid, combining deterministic EHR computation with LLM-assisted extraction. Some are LLM judge rubrics for clinical reasoning or documentation. The tasks are also physician validated. The paper describes a multi-round process in which physicians review task instructions, clinical reasoning, completeness, patient safety, checkpoint validity, and consistency with the EHR. An LLM can propose revisions, but physicians approve or reject them. For your project, this matters in two ways. First, Physician Bench shows what it takes to create a realistic medical agent benchmark. The benchmark is not just a spreadsheet of labels. It includes task instructions, patient records, tool interfaces, evaluation suites, and reference solutions. It treats clinical work as a trajectory through an information environment. Second, it shows how hard real clinical work remains for agents. The best model in the reported evaluation completes only 46.3% of tasks on pass at one. Even across three independent runs, the probability that all three runs succeed is only 28% for the best model. The next best models are much lower. Treatment planning is especially hard. This should shape your ambition. Your first paper should probably not require an autonomous agent to perform a whole clinical workflow end to end. It can ask a narrower but still meaningful question. Given an index decision vignette built from information available at that time, plus local calibration artifacts and similar case retrieval, can the agent predict the distribution and rationale of the real recommendation? That is narrower than Physician Bench, and that is a strength. Physician Bench also gives you failure categories. Across models, clinical reasoning accounts for about half of failed checkpoints on average. Data retrieval failures are smaller, but still present. Action execution failures remain systematic. Documentation failures often cascade from earlier mistakes. In a representative failure, an agent retrieved relevant data but misclassified secondary adrenal insufficiency as primary adrenal insufficiency, recommended fludrocortisone incorrectly, mentioned a referral in the written plan but failed to create the actual FHIR resource, and then documented the wrong clinical frame. That example is useful because it shows the difference between retrieving information and understanding it. The chart contained enough signal. The agent still chose the wrong clinical interpretation. For your project, this argues for careful separation between components. A vignette generator may retrieve and summarize chart data. A local knowledge base may store observed decision tendencies. A retrieval system may surface similar cases. A prediction prompt may produce probabilities. A calibration layer may adjust probabilities. A rationale evaluator may compare model explanations to chart-derived rationales. If the system fails, you want to know which part failed. Physician Bench also highlights the value of checkpoint-style evaluation. Your project can adapt that idea, even if the final output is a recommendation distribution rather than an EHR action. Checkpoints might include: did the vignette include the key pre-index information? Did the model identify missing data? Did it distinguish recommendation from final treatment? Did it assign probability mass to all clinically plausible options? Did it note patient preference when documented? Did it separate descriptive local prediction from normative guideline recommendation? Did the rationale mention the same factors that the chart rationale mentioned? In other words, do not evaluate only the top one recommendation. Evaluate the reasoning artifacts that make the prediction scientifically interpretable. One more Physician Bench detail matters. The data come from STAR, and the tasks are based on de-identified real records. Your plan also uses STAR OMOP. The paper is therefore a close local precedent for building clinical AI evaluation from Stanford EHR data, while preserving de-identification and clinician validation. The exact project target differs, but the infrastructure logic is nearby. The biggest contrast is that Physician Bench evaluates whether an agent can reliably complete clinical work. Your project evaluates whether an agent can simulate observed clinical decision behavior. Those are cousins, not twins. Physician Bench is about operational competence. Your project is about descriptive behavioral calibration. The third paper, ClinPivot, is the cleanest warning against using medical QA scores as a proxy for treatment decision ability. Cho, Zhang, and Chunara ask a simple question. Do clinical models change treatment decisions when patient context changes? The premise is familiar to any clinician. A drug can be appropriate for a disease in general and inappropriate for a particular patient. The patient may have a contraindicating comorbidity, an interacting medication, an allergy, or an off-label alternative that looks tempting but is not actually supported for the current condition. Clinical decision-making is not just knowing that treatment A treats disease D. It is knowing when the patient's specific state changes the action. ClinPivot turns that idea into a benchmark. Each item begins with a disease and an initially plausible treatment. Then it adds a decision pivot, a constraint or contextual change that should alter, or sometimes not alter, the treatment choice. The model must choose the appropriate treatment from a fixed list under the pivoted context. The benchmark is auditable because the items are built from biomedical graph relations. Each row stores disease nodes, candidate drug nodes, pivot type, banned drugs when applicable, and supporting evidence triples. The model only sees the patient vignette and answer choices, but the underlying construction is inspectable. The main result is the paper's punchline. High medical QA performance does not imply clinical decision competence. Frontier models score very high on med QA, roughly 93 to 96% in the reported table, and reasonably high on PubMed QA, roughly 75 to 82%. But ClinPivot scores are much lower, roughly 62 to 69% across the completed Frontier model runs. Model rankings also shift. A model that is strong on med QA is not necessarily strongest on ClinPivot. The training experiments are also important. The authors fine-tune QEN models on matched clinical facts rendered either as QA examples or as decision examples. Decision-structured supervision improves ClinPivot more than QA-only supervision. In the QEN 3-8B setup, decision SFT improves decision accuracy by more than 8 points over base, while QA-SFT can improve medical QA but reduce decision accuracy. That is a beautiful result for your project because it says supervision format matters. If you want a model to make patient-specific decisions, train or condition it on patient-specific decision examples. If you want a model to simulate local recommendations, train or condition it on local recommendation examples, chart rationales, and similar cases, not just generic disease treatment facts. ClinPivot also reports a retention trade-off. Clinical decision training improves decision performance and pivot sensitivity. But it can degrade general assistant capabilities. Replay of general examples preserves much of the general capability while retaining most clinical gains. For your project, this is relevant if you eventually fine-tune or adapt models rather than only prompting them. Local decision adaptation might improve behavioral fidelity while introducing brittleness, formatting issues, or degraded general reasoning, unless you evaluate retention. The limitations are just as important as the results. ClinPivot is synthetic. Its labels are graph-derived treatment choices under constructed constraints, not real physician recommendations. It does not model disease severity, patient preferences, local practice, dosage, sequencing, history taking, monitoring, or shared decision making. It is a benchmark for one narrow behavior, choosing a treatment from a fixed list after context changes. That means ClinPivot does not solve your problem. It defines one component of it. Your project extends the pivot idea in three ways. First, the pivots are not just graph-derived contraindications or allergies. They include local clinical factors like frailty, surgical candidacy, tumor anatomy, baseline kidney function, urinary symptoms, prior radiation, caregiver constraints, patient aversion, or multidisciplinary review. Second, the target is not a graph-derived gold answer. It is an observed local recommendation distribution. Third, the output is not only a selected treatment. It is probability, rationale, uncertainty, missing information, and descriptive normative divergence. Still, ClinPivot's core lesson should become a design principle. Every scenario needs clinically meaningful pivot tests. In aortic stenosis, does the agent shift probability between TAVR, SAVAR, and conservative management when age, frailty, bicuspid anatomy, vascular access, surgical risk, coronary disease, or life expectancy changes? In renal mass, does it shift between surveillance, ablation, partial nephrectomy, radical nephrectomy, and biopsy when tumor size, location, CKD, solitary kidney, anticoagulation, or frailty changes? In prostate cancer, does it preserve uncertainty when active surveillance, surgery, and radiation are all plausible, while still responding to grade group, PSA, baseline urinary symptoms, inflammatory bowel disease, age, and documented preference. The question is not merely whether the model knows the options. The question is whether probability mass moves in the right direction when the patient changes. Put the three papers together, and they form a design triangle. May says, if you claim behavioral similarity, evaluate behavior against human distributions. Watch for narrowness, framing sensitivity, and role prompt artifacts. Physician Bench says, if you claim clinical agent competence, evaluate long horizon work in real EHR environments with physician validation and checkpoint level failure analysis. Current agents still fail often, especially in clinical reasoning and treatment planning. Clin Pivot says, if you claim treatment decision competence, do not trust medical QA accuracy. Test whether decisions change under patient-specific pivots, and train or condition models on decision-structured examples. Your project sits in the middle, but with a different primary outcome. It is not trying to pass a behavioral economics game. It is not trying to autonomously complete all EHR tasks. It is not trying to pick graph-derived drug answers. It is trying to reproduce real specialist recommendation behavior under local clinical conditions. That creates a clean contribution. Prior work evaluates clinical correctness, workflow execution, or synthetic pivot sensitivity. Your project evaluates calibrated descriptive prediction of observed clinician or team recommendations, including probability distributions and rationales in real EHR-derived cases. The descriptive word is important. It avoids overclaiming. The agent is not saying, this is the optimal treatment. It is saying, given this local environment and this patient's available information, here is what clinicians here were likely to recommend. Here is why. Here is the uncertainty. And here is how that differs from a guideline-oriented recommendation. That framing also protects against the AI clinician trap from older EHR policy learning work. Retrospective treatment data are confounded. Observed decisions are not automatically optimal. Local practice variation may be wise adaptation, unwarranted variation, resource constraint, patient preference, documentation artifact, or historical drift. Your first paper should not adjudicate all of that. It should measure whether the agent can model it. That is scientifically useful on its own. A tool that can identify where local practice patterns diverge from guidelines, where recommendations vary by subgroup, where patient preference is documented, and where final treatment differs from index recommendation could support quality improvement and shared decision-making research without pretending to be a prescriptive treatment engine. The papers point toward a fairly disciplined architecture. Start with a patient vignette built only from information available before or at the index decision. This is crucial. If the vignette leaks post-index treatment, the task collapses. Physician Bench's emphasis on EHR grounding matters here, but your task can be more controlled. Structured demographics, comorbidities, labs, measurements, relevant notes, and scenario-specific variables. Next, include a literature or guideline prior. This gives the model broad medical context, but it should not be treated as enough. Clin Pivot shows that even strong knowledge can fail when the action must change under constraints. May suggests that helpful assistant priors may also flatten behavior. Then build a structured local knowledge base. The project plan's proposed shape is good. Scenario, patient factor, observed local tendency, options affected, rationale, source type, confidence, date or version, guideline relationship, subgroup limitations, and supporting cases. This should be auditable, versioned, and reviewed. It should not be a vague memory soup. Then add similar case retrieval. At test time, the agent should see carefully selected prior training patients that resemble the held-out case. Those examples should include what the model would have predicted, what clinicians actually recommended, and what rationale was documented. The purpose is not to let the model copy. It is to expose empirical local priors. Finally, consider a statistical calibration layer. The LLM can produce a probability distribution, but calibration may require adjustment. That could be an EHR-only model, a post-hoc calibration model, or a hybrid. The evaluation should ask whether calibration improves log loss, Brier score, expected calibration error, and subgroup reliability, not only accuracy. The output schema should force separation, local descriptive prediction, normative guideline recommendation, divergence explanation, probability over options, key patient factors, reasons real clinicians may choose each option, uncertainty and missing information, and, separately, final treatment prediction, if modeled. This structure directly responds to the three papers. It makes behavior distributional, like May. It makes the task EHR grounded and auditable, like physician bench. It makes treatment choice conditional on patient-specific context. The primary metrics should be probabilistic. Log loss and Brier score should be central because they reward calibrated probability, not just top one matching. Calibration curves and expected calibration error should show whether the model is overconfident. Entropy and sharpness can show whether the model is too diffuse or too narrow. Distributional similarity within clinically meaningful strata can test whether the model preserves local variation. Top one accuracy should still be reported because readers understand it, but it should not be the flagship claim. If the whole contribution is distributional fidelity, then a model that assigns 45% to surgery, 40% to radiation, and 15% to surveillance in a genuinely split clinical stratum may be better than a model that always picks the plurality option. Rationale evaluation also needs structure. Does the model identify the same decision factors documented in the chart? Does it invent unsupported rationales? Does it distinguish reasons for choosing one option from reasons for avoiding another? Does it identify patient preference, clinician uncertainty, and missing information when present? Does it clearly mark descriptive prediction as descriptive rather than medical advice? Subgroup stress tests are essential. May warns that aggregate human likeness can hide flattened variation. ClinPivot warns that patient pivots change decisions. Physician Bench warns that real clinical complexity breaks agents in detailed ways. So your stress tests should include rare or clinically meaningful cases. Extreme age, severe frailty, chronic kidney disease, solitary kidney, prior radiation, unusual anatomy, strong patient preference, borderline disease severity, recommendation treatment discordance, and cases where multidisciplinary review changes the plan. The evaluation should also compare baselines carefully. An EHR-only predictive model tests what can be learned from structured and note-derived features without LLM reasoning. A naive LLM tests whether the patient vignette alone is enough. A guideline-augmented LLM tests whether normative medical knowledge is enough. A persona-prompted LLM tests whether role-playing helps or creates plausible miscalibration. The locally calibrated agent tests whether the local knowledge base, similar case retrieval, and calibration layer add real signal. The ablations matter because the field is full of attractive stories. Retrieval sounds useful, personas sound useful, multi-agent tumor boards sound useful. The strongest first paper is probably not the broadest version. The project plan lists several appealing scenarios: severe aortic stenosis, coronary revascularization, localized prostate cancer, localized renal mass, and oropharynx cancer. The temptation is to include many domains and claim generality. But the validation burden is heavy. You need clean index dates, clear recommendation labels, chart rationales, final treatment labels, guideline context, subgroup tests, and clinician review. A deeper two-scenario study may be stronger than a thin five-scenario study. Severe aortic stenosis is attractive because it has rich structured data and a real heart team flavor. Echo parameters, gradients, valve area, ejection fraction, symptoms, surgical risk, frailty, anatomy, access, and local procedural culture. It is a good test of team recommendation behavior. Localized renal mass or localized prostate cancer would add a preference-sensitive urology or oncology decision. Renal mass has clean action categories and strong interactions between tumor size, anatomy, renal function, surgical risk, and patient age. Prostate cancer has especially rich preference sensitivity, with active surveillance, surgery, and radiation often overlapping in guideline-permitted space. That combination would let the paper say, we tested locally calibrated LLM agents across one procedural heart team decision and one preference-sensitive urologic oncology decision. That is enough range to be interesting, but not so broad that abstraction quality collapses. The title can stay close to the real contribution: distribution calibrated LLM agents for simulating real-world specialist recommendations across high-stakes, preference-sensitive clinical decisions. The first paper should avoid claiming that the agent finds the right answer. It should claim that the agent estimates observed local recommendation distributions and rationales better than guideline-only prompting, persona prompting, and EHR-only baselines, if the data support that. The three papers leave us with a useful warning and a useful opportunity. The warning is that sounding clinical is cheap. A model can pass medical QA, produce a reasonable note, or role-play a specialist and still fail at the target behavior. It may not retrieve enough EHR data. It may retrieve data and reason incorrectly. It may know the usual treatment and fail to pivot when the patient changes. It may mimic human behavior in aggregate while flattening variation. It may respond strongly to persona prompts that have never been validated. The opportunity is that the pieces for a better evaluation are now visible. From May, take distributional behavioral validation. From Physician Bench, take real EHR grounding, physician review, and checkpoint style failure analysis. From ClinPivot, take patient-specific pivots and decision structure and supervision. Then adapt all three to the actual scientific question. Can an EHR-calibrated LLM agent reproduce the distribution, rationale, uncertainty, and local variation of real specialist recommendations? If the answer is yes, even partially, that would be a meaningful contribution. It would show that clinical AI evaluation can move beyond "does the model know medicine?" toward "does the model understand how decisions are actually made here for patients like this under uncertainty?" And if the answer is no, that is also valuable. It would tell us where LLM-based clinical simulation breaks: local culture, subgroup variation, patient preference, rationale fidelity, calibration, or EHR abstraction. Either way, the project is asking the right kind of question, not whether the model can sound like a doctor, whether it can be measured against doctors as empirical decision makers. That is the difference between a simulation that is merely plausible and a simulation that is scientifically useful.